everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Vic and Zoe Avery.
Well, hello once again and welcome to the Spirits Book Show and happy holidays, the metaphysical show with a difference. I'm Sylvie Avery and...
I'm Mick Avery, hello.
Hey. We are mediums who have chosen to serve humanity through our gifts of spirit communication. And on this show we focus on education through Mick's deep trance mediumship. We bring you the truth as the nature of your existence direct from the other side of life. Today's show will be discussing all sorts of different things because I have many of your questions that you have emailed in to me. So we look forward to that. I mean, if you would like to join us with a question, not a personal reading style question, but a general question about life, the universe, and anything that you think the spirit world might be able to inform you on, then you can... phone us and the lines are open. It's toll free in the US and Canada, and in the US the number is 877-876-5227. In Canada it's 888-815-9756, and international callers it's 001-530-876-3222. But the international calls aren't free, but they're only a quick call, so it won't break the bank.
No, it won't, will it? Well, hi, welcome to Spirits Work, everyone, on bbsradio.com every Sunday here at 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 6 p.m. GMT. And if you'd like to know more about us, perhaps you'd like to make an order for a book or a CD or any of the downloads that we have, or you can book an Akashic reading. Oh, and there are lots and lots of different kinds of Akashic readings. We don't just do one sort. We do all kinds of things, as well as geophysical readings of land and all kinds of stuff. Anyway, we suggest you go visit our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, and also live on www.spiritsworkradio.com. And now, for those in the UK and Europe, we're at www.mickavery.com. Now, as regular listeners will know, each week live on the show, I channel an enlightened spirit guide called Gregory Hay, who is the main spokesperson for a group of evolved spirits called the White Cloud Group. Gregory himself had an earth life in the early 1700s in England and has come to share the wisdom he has gained access to with those of us still on the earth. We don't spend very long talking chit-chat and that kind of thing in this show, purely and simply because... we try to give over as much time as possible to the spirit world, and Gregory Hay has always heaps to say. And then, of course, it means that you have the benefit of full interaction with the spirit world without me being here. Thank you.
Joy.
Yes, absolutely. With joy for you and for me, in a sense. I just go to sleep. So, I hope you enjoy the show, everyone. And God bless and see you next week.
Yes, Gregory is the spokesperson for the White Cloud Group, who are a group of scientific minds of all descriptions and ordinary people as well. They're an educational team and have come to give us access to information that we would need to know in order that we can move toward a more harmonious and peaceful way of life, in understanding the nature of our existence and helping us to evaluate our lives differently. When mixed in trance, his spirit and his consciousness are transported by the scientific members of the White Cloud Group, taken somewhere somewhere different every time, actually. He doesn't always know where he's gone either. And then we can enjoy the complete personality of Gregory Hay. So this isn't Mick passing information through from a non-physical entity. It's completely a different personality that will be taking the show with me. And as Mick said, you can find out more about us from our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. Yeah, so well anyway, I hope you're having a lovely Sunday and not eating too much chocolate. I've actually made a pact with myself that I'm not going to eat any chocolate this holiday, although I do quite like the natural organic chocolate, with dark chocolate, but I might treat myself to the odd square next week. But I don't know, I can't just eat one. But anyway, I hope you're having a lovely time, and whether you're listening to this live or on a download, doesn't really matter. We're reaching out to you wherever you are, and like I say, you can always email us at any time. Doesn't have to be during the show, or you know, you don't have to phone us during the show, because you know, after all, this is usually a sort of like an educational program, really, and very often we tend to get engrossed in listening to Gregory and what he has to say, and then we tend to think of our questions later on. And like I say, you can email me at enq@spirit-teaching.com if you want me to put a question to Gregory on your behalf one week. It doesn't matter what it's about, I will do that for you and give you a little mention. So I do believe Gregory's with us now.
Yes, my dear friend, with love and light. Welcome, everyone, to all of those who may be listening at this present time, or those who may listen to the program after it has been made.
Yes.
I thank you so very much, in any event, for joining with us at this present time, however that takes place. And I welcome you with open heart, open mind, and, of course, the love of the spirit world.
Thank you. Did you want to start with anything today in particular?
I was just going to remind you, my dear friend Little Bird, of course, that dark chocolate itself is actually very good for you and actually reduces heart distress and also possible heart attacks and various other heart situations by eating just one square of it in each and every day.
So that's the 85% chocolate?
Yes, quite so.
Or absolutely. 75, whatever you can get. 75 or 85.
Yes, quite so. And it has to be dark, because
very dark.
Then it has the right qualities in its chemical content that actually enable this situation to take place. Mm. But it's actually extremely good for you. Yeah.
So one square a day, not one bar a day.
Yes, that's right.
So it's just making sure that you don't have another square and another square and another square. Isn't it, really? That's the problem with it.
Yes, quite so. I do believe it's about, a totality would be around a gram or so, or perhaps two.
For it to be good for you?
Yes.
That's interesting, isn't it? Okay. On the other hand, it is quite expensive, so I guess that be a good way of keeping you sort of monitoring the situation, really, because you couldn't afford to have a bar a day, could you? Really?
No,
I don't know about in America, but I mean, I think it's about...
Yes.
I don't know.
I am unaware of that.
£2.50 or something for a bar.
More than three groats, then.
Three groats. Just trying to think what that is in dollars, but anyway, I'm not.
I don't know how many groats to a dollar, friend.
Groats. Okay, so groats was the currency when you were having a physical life.
It was just at the end of the use of groats. Yes.
Hmm. So it was groats and what? I mean, you know, like it's dollars and cents, it's pounds.
Well, there were groats actually transpired into pennies and half pennies.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that gives you some idea. But actually, a groat would buy you quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You could get a chicken for...
I just thought you were going to say a goat.
No, my dear friend. You could buy a chicken, a live chicken, for about 1.5 groats, which is not very much.
No.
But usually, actually, wildlife and that kind of thing, stock life... would usually be exchanged for other goods, and very seldom did money actually take change hands, apart from, of course, in the very large markets and that kind of thing. But really, in living in the country, it was much more the barter system still, even though there were great situations within the parliamentary state of whoever was in power at the time, that they actually manifestly controlled a great deal of the wealth and earnings and all of that. For us, we were really had very little to do with all of that realm of things. It soon became that, for example, in order to earn a sixpence, that was almost unheard of, you see.
That's interesting, isn't it? The barter system and, well, basically, you know, doing jobs for your neighbour and then...
Yes, yes.
That would be so beneficial now in this, you know, this current climate. If we got into that a lot more, wouldn't it, really?
I do feel so.
Even if it's fixing fences, you know, somebody wants a fence fixed and somebody else wants a patio laid or whatever, and everybody gets together and does a job.
Yes, yes, quite so, that's right. In exchange for whatever that person is able to give, or by way of... Of course, the point is that all of this came about, the monetary system, however you exclaim that to be, actually came about originally because the barter system in many respects was so ungainly. And for some people, they actually prided themselves in a higher value of their work, obviously, for skills invested or whatever. They prided themselves with a higher value of work. Therefore, it meant that a situation of thanks or bartering their wares or their abilities was simply unable to be fulfilled. So it became also, of course, with more and more people who were who had obtained large amounts of land. Usually, I have to say that land was not something that was necessarily bought and sold, but actually that was acquired simply because of crown peerage or because of favour from a higher estate, you see. So that, for example, if a person, a goodly knight, was given a some form of captaincy and that then developed into something else because of his good deeds or whatever that were, these were not deeds that could then be sufficiently brought about in payment as far as actual wealth was concerned. So what they tended to do was simply give them land. Many people actually, when they sided with a royalty or with one issue or another, would generally be paid by land ownership.
Do you think we ought to do more of this at the, you know, I think people are embarrassed to say, you know, I need a job doing around the house or in the garden or something or other, but they're embarrassed to say, you know, but I haven't got any money, but I can do sewing or whatever it is.
Or whether it's typing or something else that if they have a skill, particularly, of course, if they are people who are older and have perhaps finished their sequences of their fruitful life journey in respect of them being paid for creative work or whatever. I am well aware, however, that many people will perhaps not wish to cite with this condition, but I really do feel that it is all in accordance with the ways of so many other planets in having this form of barter system, whereas the thoughts and realization of what you have created within all of the ramifications of your physical life, particularly if you are a person of 50 or 60 or whatever, and that you have actually amassed a great deal of knowledge. That is something that is priceless in many respects. And it should not be wasted. Should certainly not be. That is something that I find very difficult in many respects to see and watch as many, many hundreds of thousands of peoples. When they come to a certain point in their life, they simply stop working, or they're actually forced to stop working.
Yes.
And therefore their skills are no longer required, when in actual fact, for oftentimes, they will be at the best, the peak.
Mm.
And that even for their skills to then pass them on to others, to younger people, is not something endemic within all societies. It's something that's actually been lost. And so as we observe and follow with this, there are a great many people who actually simply, particularly younger people, who simply don't have the skills passed on to them, oftentimes because of subsequent labour and the kinds of apprenticeship servings of children and young people into older established professions and situations of great favour, of great skill and architecture and great skill and ability within the understanding of how to make the physical body work for oneself in an absolute primal education, really, to bringing about great works of both art, of sculpture, great works of building techniques, of making things, of creative things.
Mm.
All of this is simply lost by those people. I know that there are maybe possibly some people who really don't want to continue working, and that's perfectly all right, a matter for them.
Mm.
They can still use the barter system, still use their trading ability with the good consciousness, the status of their learning experiences, and what they have gathered throughout their humble physical lives is something that should be shared and amassed by the whole population. So it's actually something that is not just given back to the population, but that is something that is dutifully shared so as they can then share in that experience and joy of it, so that other people may then learn old ways. Yes, older ways, that's perfectly all right too. You don't have to have everything thrown out with the bathwater and the baby, and actually think that everything that has been done at some stage in the past is useless or out of date or something like that. It's not like that at all. That only applies to certain very specific tools and tasks within your society. It's not something which actually is addressed throughout the entire spectrum of all things that have to be done in order to keep a society, a civilization, actually active.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the thing is, there's people have to go to college and they can't afford to go to college to learn trades and skills that these people that have come to their retirement age are, you know, could actually pass on quite willingly and probably, you know, actually relish in the new role that they have.
Quite
possibly, you know, because they don't have to physically manually, if it's a manual situation, do it, but teach.
Yes,
and,
that's right.
You know, how wonderful would that be?
Absolutely.
And, you know, that would serve so many purposes. I think this is it. We overlook the situation. It's because of certificates as well, isn't it? I think you have to have a certificate of a diploma or whatever for just about everything. You know,
and then, of course,
virtually.
Yes,
so I think that's probably a lot to do with it. But, hey, you know, okay, create your own certificate, your own diploma course, your own, you know, everybody, that's what everybody does anyway.
Yes, quite so.
You know.
Yes. Unfortunately, of course, many people feel that they cannot teach, but that's purely and simply because it's drawn down into a certain specific area, as though this is something that you have to do. You have to teach in this way, and there is no other way. So therefore, it means you include a certain specific syllabus or whatever it is. But what I'm saying, really, is that much of that's hooey, in a sense, because although it is relative to modern-day thinking, perhaps, and practices, what you also have to understand is that the real-life skills of a person using their hands and showing that ability to others and explaining and moving them through the journey, going through the journey with them in order to gain that experience, is something which actually is priceless and is not something that can simply be taught in a school or whatever through a by writing on a board.
Or learnt from a book a lot of the time.
Yes, quite so. So simply, human beings have to contain the skills, have to continue with them, continue to advance them, of course. Yes, absolutely so.
Yes.
But, of course, within any situation, if you have, particularly, I would have to say, a civilization which has a great deal of ancient state within it, so, for example, old buildings and that kind of thing, then you need to have people who are actually immersed in that subject sufficiently to understand, really, how to fix it and make it, keep it up to a certain standard of livable condition, or so that the building doesn't collapse or fall down or something like that. So these are all, however, also instructive, intuitive within the state of it, that they would also need to understand the exact ways that these were cast in the first place so that they could be maintained in the right practice.
Mm, absolutely, yes.
To ensure their integrity and historical identity throughout the ages. Mm. The reason why I suppose we on our side of life are so instrumental in this, and really that we feel that this should be honoured and kept in all situations, is really to do with the simple fact that there are so many on our side of life who really wish to see these buildings continue in their perfect state, or as in a righteous state as is practical or possible. Now, I understand in the Americas, for example, a great many of these situations are unfortunately wasted, and a great many of the skills are wasted too.
What makes you say that?
Well, purely and simply, particularly, I have to say, because of histrionics. The America, North America, for example, doesn't have a very long history, in a sense of its own making, in a sense of its own state of work, how human beings think of it as now. So it's something that whatever that you have now, you have to preserve. You have to make it in the best way, in the best light possible. So that means to say with buildings as well as with machinery, with all different kinds of situations. You need to be able to reflect the different ages through which your society has evolved, because that then brings a society a certain sense of purpose and remembrance of those times actually makes for a form of comprehension about a given identity for that people. That's really what it does. It's in a part, in a sense, you see, my dear friend, what used to happen in native indigenous peoples of North America, for example, they would sit around various campfires or whatever, they would talk a great deal. There were stories handed down from one generation to another about days gone past. Now, naturally, for many of them, for most of them, in fact, they didn't do cave paintings. They actually didn't have fabrics or situations that were that long-lasting. So oftentimes it would be that even the relics of their time were actually discarded eventually, purely and simply because they'd gone past their use and they weren't seen as being objects of value or continuing that value, purely and simply because all was kept in the mind. But if you don't pass down these stories, if you don't interact with others of future generations as a being, you are, in the sense, withdrawing the possible histories they may learn by, and therefore also learn by those mistakes of various points in history, instead of just relying upon historical documentation or something of that nature, which actually may not be wholly accurate.
Mm. Yes, you can't progress purely because of the technology, you know, computerized technology, for instance, and that sort of thing, which
no.
is a wonderful thing that we've got in our time now.
Yes,
but
yes.
There are certain things that are going by the way, meanwhile, aren't there?
Yes, yes, quite so.
Practical skills.
Yes, yes, quite so.
Creative skills, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes, okay. Right. Can I just ask you this as well about dyslexia? I mean, I haven't actually done any research on this. I wasn't going to talk about it, but it sprang to my mind while you were discussing that when I was younger, years ago, that it wasn't so, you didn't hear about it so much.
No, because it simply wasn't recognised.
Is that what it was? It was still there, though?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So, absolutely, 100%. It's never not been there.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that so many people find it difficult to read for very specific reasons.
Mm.
It may be simply because of letter shape. It may simply be because they don't see certain shapes the same way that you see certain shapes. And it may well be that's part of the reason, incidentally, why it is that the most perfect formed letters, which are round, are acceptable to all eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting point of value, really. And also to understand as well that for some people, it can be their colour state within the retina, how the retina sees colour and interprets it, which can then ultimately lead to disparities within the eye, or both, which then lead to the inability of that person to actually read properly, even though the letters may be in black and white. Simply because of certain colour orientations, it may be that person simply is unable to really be able to put the words together because they can't see all of the letters.
Mm. Yes, I mean, you know, obviously, well, when we were talking then, I was just thinking about how differently people learn, you see, and that is something that can be, you know, a great disadvantage to some people that do have to go and do these diplomas, etc., go to college to do what they want, but then they have that added burden.
Yes, yes,
and
that's
so
quite true.
Actually would learn maybe some things a lot better by a hands-on experience.
Yes, yes, quite so. Mm. That's right.
Okay. Yes, very interesting. Okay, so I have my first question from John in Georgia. What makes humans so inharmonic? What gene is missing that other benevolent races have?
I would not say that, on the whole, human beings are unharmonic. I would say that the problem with human beings is that they have a certain attraction toward violence, because it illuminates power. And human beings, for want of a better word, crave power. They crave power for different reasons. Partly because it means that genetically they are safer within their herd. So this means to say, if they are safer, then they are further up the ladder of their success. Harmonizing with their genetics then means that their genetic ancestry will be assured. And that is simply how human beings see it. It's not to say that there is then a gene missing in human beings because they are violent. Or that there is something else missing, apart from a bit of love, I suppose, and apart from actually understanding that they don't have to be violent in order to perfect their genome, in order to continue their life experience and for their offspring also, to even have offspring. Now, at other times during human activity, prehistory, there were actually situations where human beings used to really fight and squabble like cat and dog, purely and simply to try to assure themselves of their own genetic responsibility and their assured success in continuing to be able to breed. It was very, very important. It's part of the reason why there were so many battles, why there were so many large squabbles between different peoples. And you will have that, in fact, right throughout native history. Whatever native person or situation that is, you will see that there are many, many different positions that have been taken, even if you have had a body of beings, a tribe, who were very loving, very instilling within their journey of life, very harmonic toward perhaps other forms of life to a certain point, and to their ability to maintain their existence through a form of farming that enabled them to not necessarily have to stay in one place, because they oftentimes would move around from one place to another, but that they actually, in the main, found that they could give up the armed struggle from one condition to another. They didn't have to fight for water, even though at times they did, purely and simply because water was a precious commodity, and that they knew that they would suffer if they did not have those accesses that they needed and desired. Same thing goes on your side of life right now, at this very moment, where water rights are eroded, and where this leaves a tribe feeling disenfranchised, feeling hunted, in fact, very much living on a wire, very much living on a tightrope of existence. And that's simply down to human behavior. One group of human beings saying to another group, you can't have this, it's mine. So what I have to say is this is not responsible to a genetic. Genetics are not at fault here. It's not something that exists only in other beings and not in humans. Humans can be completely and absolutely sated with harmony.
Yes, but surely then it's when resources are scarce, water, space, food, whatever.
Yes, what if I would agree with that.
What if everybody had an abundance of whatever it was that they
then you
wanted?
Wouldn't have it.
You don't think so?
Well, would have a certain situation where certain people would become greedy and want more than others.
Exactly.
And that's generally also what tends to happen. They will either hunger for power, position within a situation, perhaps so that they have power over other people's lives. Oftentimes people are very much attracted to that. Again, it's in a sense, it's not a genetic position. It's a genetic response, if you like. It's something that becomes a genetic response. It's something that, in a sense, triggers various pheromonic activity that develops into huge chemical displays. But it is not specifically genetic. It's not that you can say this race or this whole people are genetically misprinted because of this piece here, this little stick here that's missing, or this little stick here that's been added that makes it beat itself up. Human beings don't have that. What there is within all species upon the earth, and many, many species throughout the universe, throughout the multiverse, is that the will to survive. That is not a genetic undertone. It's something that all living beings possess, simply because of the fight or flight situation, syndrome. And what we find when we observe either human beings or their closest allies, chimpanzees or orangutans, actually not orangutans because they tend not to be violent. That might be a situation then, that you actually start breeding some orangutan into the human state once again. You notice I say once again. In actual fact, you will find that some of the most vociferous, some of the most agitated can oftentimes be people who have the closest links with their primate partners. That would be those with ginger hair, then.
No. Really?
Yes, absolutely, yes. It's only, and I make no, isn't a negative, my dear friend, but simply because of the fact that the red hair is closest to an orangutan.
Mm.
which is the closest primate that human beings have to the physical voyage. It's not chimpanzees.
So they might be more passive then?
That's quite true, yes.
Because
that is quite true.
Is
but also genetically, they have a great deal of strength, you see? Yes, sorry.
Because we all, you know, the sayings are, you know, that they've got a short fuse.
Fiery redhead.
Exactly.
Yes.
But that
they had that saying in my day,
did
too.
Did they? So yes, it actually doesn't mean anything, does it? Nothing.
No, it actually meant that usually if that was the case and there was one present in wherever you were, you had to mind your P's and Q's.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, so here's another question from John.
So I meant no disparaging remark there.
No, not at all.
No.
Can you clarify, what is human nature?
Human nature. It's a very difficult question. Human nature is whatever that group of beings make of it at that point, surely. Human nature is not necessarily what you would think it is. Human nature is not necessarily to be vegetarian. Human nature is not necessarily to eat other animals either. It's a matter that human beings actually take whatever they desire at the time. And whatever their tastes are moving them toward being. Or how they actually find that taste or that food group actually reacts with them. That's exactly the same if you look at a horse and you would observe perhaps a horse not eating a whole mass of one type of grass, but actually moves across a field, gradually consuming different kinds of grasses, different forms, sometimes actually even scooping mouthfuls of mud as well in with the food that they eat, purely and simply because that these contain minerals. And they would eat different kinds of plants, dandelions, maybe thistles, maybe it might, even if their horses live in a high desert situation or something like that, be feeding on cactus. But they won't just subsist on one type. They will actually dig for plant roots. They will dig for different kind of minerals and that kind of thing. I don't detract. I'm just saying that all animals, all beings of life are the same in that respect. They will eat a multitude of different things. From fishes in the sea eating one another to fishes in the sea being eaten by human beings or by other birds or by animals or by some other such being.
But human nature, sure, you know, I mean, if you were talking to somebody from another planet and you were trying to explain the people of the Earth and...
They're very complex.
We are very complex.
Yes.
But there must be certain...
traits.
Yes, that you would say to this being that, you know, they can be diverse. There must be a parameter of different things that you can do, basically.
Yes, I understand. And the parameter of different things, different subjects within the area have to be looked at within different understanding, I suppose.
Okay,
treat one as one thing. Yes.
I don't think I'm... Oh, what happened here? Hang on a second. I'm trying to get this call. We have a caller, and I'm not sure... Hello?
Hello? Can you hear
Hello.
Me?
Hello. Yes. Hi, Tanya.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hello. You're from Canada?
I am. British Columbia.
Okay, lovely. Well, that's lovely to have you join us. And you have a question for Gregory?
Yes. I'm going to Sedona, Arizona next week. I had a dirt bike accident, almost 3 years ago. The doctors have been unable to fix me. I've been left to fix myself. I'm wondering if Gregory has any hints for me of how I can use the vortexes or certain crystals or crystal wands to heal my leg while I'm there.
Okay.
Well, my dear friend, I would suggest that actually what you do is that you... there are certain places where you may bathe. where you may immerse yourself in the water, which actually carries a great deal of minerals to do with the area itself. Okay. And I would suggest, friend, that it is would be part of what you do in respect of this. I understand that many people feel about the certain energies of the area, and true enough to say that many of these energies do exist within the area, but also is down to human experience and human interpretation of what those energies may be. I would suggest, dear friend, that what you also seek as well is help from other practitioners, healers, etc., to bring about a healing for you. But I'm saying, however, that within this situation, that you can bring about a great deal of healing for yourself, to yourself, simply by using the water in the locality to bring this about.
Interesting.
Hmm.
So there's water within, like, the Arizona that has minerals, or water in other areas in the world are you speaking of?
I'm saying, my dear friend, at that particular place, the area of Sedona, that actually has various springs that you can go to, that you can seek out. And what I suggested you do is, obviously, you can't necessarily bathe in it, but you will be able to trap some of the water and use it as a form of medicinal care, you see?
Yeah, yes, I do.
Mm, that sounds good.
Excellent.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope you have a lovely time. When are you going?
On Wednesday.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. So. I bet you're really excited, aren't you?
I am, because I went there a year and a half ago, and I had, let me just put it to you this way, life's never been the same since, and I never knew that what I'm living right now even existed. So I've written a book on my experiences, 900 pages, and the conclusion of my book is I'm going to fix my own leg, because the doctors don't seem to know how to do it.
Yes,
yeah. I've learned that I do have some healing abilities within myself.
Yes,
absolutely so. I would suggest, my dear friend, also at the same time that you do that, that you use two certain specifics here as well in your diet that you need to use in abundance in your diet. Okay. And one is garlic and the other is ginger.
Okay.
And there is also a situation, dear friend, where you can use different forms of either garlic or onion, or in fact ginger, ground into a kind of a paste and then placed upon the skin.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay, well, where's
it go? So that's a very good thing to take internally as well as externally to use topically upon the skin, you see? Even if the conditions concerning your leg or where, some other body part are maybe not surface, but maybe deep within, maybe even to do with skeletal structure, this will still help as well.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Gregory.
Yes, yes.
Well, thanks for calling, Tanya. Have a lovely time, and let us know how you got on.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. God bless. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Okay.
So humans,
yes.
Humans everywhere. And we see that within this situation then, when you are looking at humanity, what is this, or what is harmony, or how can you define humanity, a human being, its traits? It's extremely difficult because it depends entirely upon what tribe you look at. Do they have certain racially motivated customs, or are they something gregarious? Are they something inclusive that actually doesn't look at color or does not observe the difficulties certain people with certain genetic malformations or something that they don't see that as a backward step, but they actually embrace it. These, of course, if you were looking, speaking to an alien being who didn't come from the Earth plane, and they were, you were asking them what they saw within the human race, it would be extremely difficult to pin it down purely and simply because there are so many differences.
Mm.
So there is not one specific trait which one could say is honorary, or one that one could say is completely catastrophe either.
Yes, it would be interesting to know what we would be like without all of the things that we argue over, you know, religion,
yes.
Like you say, lack of resources,
yes.
And that sort of thing, all of these different things,
yes, but
politics, etc.
Yes,
what would we be like underneath all of that?
But it isn't just that. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes it can make a people to actually have to come together to honour one particular cause or another. That's exactly what had happened in various world wars. On your side of life, and wars through the ages, the Napoleonic Wars, many different situations between different countries, Britain and Spain, Britain and France, Britain and the Americas. Yes, however that has befallen it, there are good and bad people within all situations, in all results of it. Some people will use the situation to abuse, to feed themselves, their own frenzy, their own hunger, for or desire for forms of physical manipulation, which you just wouldn't think of in a normal thread of life.
Well, yes, I mean, we fight from town to town, village to village. I mean, it's
yes,
incredible. But
religion to religion.
Yes, but I always think, you know, obviously that it's because there's so many of us in a small place, or I don't know, you know, with the intelligence that we have to what we had when we, you know, sort of thousands of years ago.
Yes.
Then when there wasn't so many of us sort of thing, but there was more space, but also equally less resources, I guess. I just wondered what's changed between the things that actually make us fight and bicker.
Very little, actually. It's still the same sort of stuff that people argue over. Dwellings, place, language. They'll fight over women, over gender. They'll fight over water access, food rights. They'll fight and plunder one another's villages. Grabbing for something that they didn't work for, because it's easier to do that than go out and work for it.
Yeah.
It's a simpler practice.
Yeah.
Do you see?
Yeah, absolutely. This is it's incredible. Thank you very much for this question, John.
Yes, absolutely so, John Finn.
But yeah, it's very, very interesting. Very interesting, because yes, it makes you realise as well, you know, because we're into looking out into knowing what's out there, ETs and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Who's with us and who's
yes,
out there.
Yes,
and
yes,
it makes you realise that we can't actually probably very easily categorise other planets either and other races. So
no, that's
you
right.
Think,
it's extremely difficult.
We can't be the only complicated species.
Yes, and you can't say that all visiting races are all going to be docile or whatever. That's rubbish. And you can't even say that one is, because it is bound to have certain flavours or certain situations where they become hostile. Otherwise, they wouldn't be surviving. They wouldn't be here now, present, if they did not have hostile abilities within them.
Why?
Because they have to be that way in order to survive physical life.
Physical life as in our physical life or their physical life?
As in anyone's physical life.
But
I'm
why?
Not saying that that's endemic,
no,
because obviously when you look at various tribes in Indian history, Indian subcontinent, not skin. When you look at various forms of Indian history, those tribes who have remained vegetarian actually usually did so because of cause and effect, because of the situation of their environment or some other reason that they did that. Or maybe actually to do with religious, a religious form of understanding that they would not wish to partake in other physical life that was that had the capability of thought.
Okay, but you know, saying about these extraterrestrials, if they are these beautiful beings, and you said, well, they must have an edge to them, or else to survive. I don't really see why they if they have everything that they need, then why would they?
To be honest, my dear friend, many people on your side of life have a very interminable romantic vision of what beautiful beings are.
Mm-hmm.
And that vision is then interpreted into even indigenous peoples. Oh, what beautiful beings they are. They're living in a rainforest and they're just surviving on their wits' ends. But they're really harmonic people and really beautiful. But in actual fact, they're going around killing monkeys and eating them and various other things because they have to survive.
Because they have to. We have a preoccupation with enlightened beings.
Yes.
Because we are so far removed from it, I guess.
Yes, I understand.
I don't know. Yes.
So all I'm saying is that what human beings have to do is to remove themselves away from the romantic idyllic that's emerged in the brain, that seems to have been melded there from some purpose or some situation or other that gives human beings the thoughts that they have to reach this divine fulcrum purpose, which is unattainable when in physical state.
Hmm.
And I don't mean to say that I'm then putting a dampener or a great negative situation. I'm simply here playing devil's advocate in that respect, in saying if you are really wanting to do this, and that means that you would not eat butter, it means that you would not eat most of the things that you are given to eat.
Or wear.
Or yes, absolutely so. Because most of the things that you eat currently now on your side of life involve other life or the taking of other life in some way.
Yes, and I have to think that about clothes.
And so it's actually extremely difficult for human beings to actually be completely vegan, to be completely abstaining from the taking of life, because there are many different situations that are actually being brought about that involve the taking of life that you don't realize, or maybe to do with the involvement of using other human physical life to the detriment of themselves. In exploitation, in racial hatred, in some other form of using and creating suffering by that mechanism.
Okay.
So I'm simply saying here, human beings have to look at themselves, at what they think, what they feel, and what they really want to aspire to be, and be truthful about it. Because then you have the glimpse and understanding that you can really become an enlightened, beautiful being.
By just being, though.
By just being.
This is how you do it, isn't it?
Yes.
Surely.
Yes.
I mean, if you have to think about it that hard,
then that just defeats its purpose.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly so.
Yes. Okay. Because surely that is really outside of the human scope of the imagination of what somebody who enlightened would be. So you paint a little picture, or somebody's painted a picture of what an enlightened being would be, and then...
And it's always something that's unattainable.
Yeah, but then you try and fit in that mould, and it just doesn't seem to fit,
does it?
Because
why human beings struggle so much, and they don't have to struggle that much. That's what I'm saying. Enlightenment is open to all.
Okay, well, thank you for these questions. And,
yes, absolutely so.
We'll and see you again next week.
Yes. God bless upon your journeys, everyone. God bless. And thank you so to Master Don Newsim and all the little Newsims and other beings who are infiltrated in that little situation of machinery. Yeah. I thank you so. God bless.
Thank you, and thank you so much for your questions. And like I said, do email us at enq at spirit-teaching.com if you would like me to ask Gregory a question next week for you. And we hope you've enjoyed the show. Our website is www.spirit-teaching.com. I'm Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.